You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. My name is Horizon, and my very special guest today is Samantha Rennie. Good morning, Samantha.
Morning. How are you going out there?
So, Samantha, you're a specialist in grief, and in particular, combining or dealing with grief or processing grief in a creative way. Tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
So I've got a varied background. I first trained as an art teacher working with, young people, teenagers, and going through that difficult, what I later learned is actually one of the most massive transitions we go through in life and is actually a really big grief process. And then I moved into nursing and moved into a deep understanding about health and well-being. And but from the perspective of working back from where I was working with disease and then going, why are people ending up here? You know, I worked in critical care and oncology and looking at people who most of the time we knew were ending up with diseases that were preventable. And so then I started to really look into mind-body medicine and started my own practice about educating people around how the body and the brain work. And in discovering that, happened to get a part-time job as a grief educator, community support person with funeral company, and really found that for most people it was the fact that we didn't know how to grieve. We suppressed most of the feelings around grief, that we created so much illness in the body, and became really passionate about learning how to bring those feelings back into the community and back into people's lives and make people feel safe with them. And because not only was it people who were going through grief don't feel safe, it was people like nurses and doctors and health professionals who didn't feel safe with them either. So they were just the elephant in the room everywhere we went. And so I became really excited about integrating it back into life. And it just turned out that I'd been suffering with anxiety and depression on a personal level since I was 19. And in discovering grief, realized that it had all been a process of not grieving for the loss of my family through divorce, and realizing that this is what's going on for so many people, that anxiety and depression is actually just a symptom of unprocessed grief, and as is disease. It's all disease, and if we learn how to grieve, life gets better. I mean, it took me 10 years, but life is so much better. Now I can grieve. So that's my passion now, is to bring it back for everybody.
What is grief?
It's look, there's a few definitions in there. First of all, it's a physical, spiritual, emotional process that we need to go through when we have lost something that we have understood in the world. So we make sense of this life and this world through creating a story about what life is. And when that gets stopped in some way or ends in some way before that chapter was meant to end or before that story was meant to end, we then have to start to rewrite our story. And the grief process is really about a transition from that story into the next chapter. And it's really, as a nurse, what I really realized was that the grief process is a healing process, just like if you have a wound. So if you have an amputation of an arm, just like you can have an amputation to your life if somebody dies or if you go through a divorce, or and when you have a physical wound, you have pain, you have the need to withdraw, you get incredibly tired, you go through this healing process so that the wound can heal and you can adapt to your new body. Well, grief is exactly the same. It's an emotional response that makes you need to rest, need to withdraw, need to recover, need to regrow this new identity and this new way, and rehabilitate into this new way of being in the world. So that's how I see grief, that if we allow it its full expression, if we start to listen to the feelings rather than hating them and wanting them to go away, and they're described as negative emotions. They are not negative. They're incredibly powerful and positive, and sadness and anger and all of those are important guides to say, this is how you will heal and this is how you will become somebody new. But we ignore them and go, no, I've got to be back like I was. and that's not healthy. So that's sort of how I see it. But one of the most beautiful quotes I heard about it was that grief is love with nowhere to go. And just like that story has come to an end, that story was about love. I mean, that's how we live. We love our families. We love our lives. We love the work we do. We love something. And love is pouring and pushing us in that direction. And so then when something happens that says, no, love can no longer go here, all grief is the transition of going, now where can love go? And people sit there for a long time going, but I just want to love that person. I just want to love that person. And that's the pain. I want that. There is nothing else I want. And that's the yearning and that's the grief that we feel. And then it starts to transition and we go, where, how can love, just like a river that gets blocked, starts to build and erode around that wall and go, I'm going to keep eroding this. I'm going to sit here until love erodes it and I find a new path and a new collateral, you know, avenue for the river of love to flow. And the grief process is moving from that wall to letting love start to flow again in a new way. So that's kind of the summary of what I've learned about grief.
Fantastic. I'm just thinking about if it's like an emotional wound, you know, or an amputation, and you can imagine that love wanting to flow through. It's like it's gushing. Like if you had your arm amputated, it's gushing. It's gushing out. So is there, let's talk about the healing process. So do you think that you almost have a seal over that wound at some point? Like almost like when our body starts to heal over, is there a sealing process as well before the love be redirected?
Yeah, absolutely. So just like with the, you know, if you think of it, even like with an amputation, we have a phantom limb that's incredibly painful. And so we are still seeing that we have this arm. And it takes a long time for the brain to process that, hold on, there's not an arm there. And that's exactly what the grief is like. Hold on, I still have this life. You know, they talk about the denial stage where we can't even begin to comprehend that this has changed. It's so much a part of our lives. We come home and expect everything to be the same. It takes a long time for physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually for us to go, oh, it's actually not there. We have to live it over and over, and it's painful to go. We have to feel the pain of it not being there for us to actually get that it's not there. And so just the same with the limb, eventually we kind of go, oh, it's really not there. And they've done a whole lot of reprogramming of the brain now. They've got special rehabilitation that gets the brain to understand that the arm is not there, and or also to program it so that it doesn't hurt anymore, that it's not painful. And then they slowly adapt it. But that's the same for wounds. If you think about a wound, if you've got a cut that they've actually had to take something out of your physical body, you go through a physical healing process that involves re-epithelialization, which is the cells have to slowly merge back together. It requires really good blood flow. It requires rest. It requires good nutrition. It requires all of those things. And when we give wounds those things, and it's the same in grief, if we rest, if we eat well, if we sleep well, if we take the time to listen to what the emotional and spiritual body need, then they start to connect back together around the wound and form a new cohesion around what was removed. New blood cells, you know, they literally cut through capillaries and veins and arteries. They can cut through those, and then new veins and arteries grow and reconnect so that blood flow can now move again through that whole area. So the way a wound heals is very similar to how we need to heal in a grief process. Yeah.
So the world is going through a grieving process at the moment, because of the pandemic, or the Great Pause. I think someone called it the Great Pause. Let's talk a little bit about why people are not starting to grieve, or they don't even understand grief after a song.
First of all, I think grief has kind of been a little bit hijacked into this sense that we only grieve when somebody dies. I almost think that's why when a celebrity dies, or it's like we get permission to grieve. And we have this mass group grieving, like people are allowed to grieve and be sad. Someone will understand why I am sad about that. And really we have more grief now. We lose more things now than we ever have before in the way our society is, with the fact that children can now live in a whole nother country. You know, we lose our families in ways we've never done before. You know, the fact that people move house, change jobs. The average time that someone stays in a job now is something like 4 years. You know, we have regular changes of people in our lives that just keep changing. We have changes through the fact that we live longer. So we go through a greater aging process. We go through more changes to our health and our abilities than ever before. And then there's technological changes, where the way that we used to love to live has changed. And so right now, like you say, we're going through this massive grief process around the climate. I mean, Australia has just gone through this incredible grief around loss of ecology through the bushfires. We barely had time to grieve that before that grief has been hijacked by the next one, which is the coronavirus, where we're now grieving the loss of jobs, where we're grieving the loss of our pleasures and our freedoms, our civil sense of, you know, capacity to do things. And people just react and respond to that out of their base strategies for survival, rather than understanding that this is a grief process. And if we spend time in sadness and anger in the positive sense rather than the divisive sense, then something can really grow from this. And there are a lot of incredibly beautiful things growing from this. Communities are coming together, people are supporting each other, and I think part of that is because we've all decided that it's a good reason to be doing it, and we're not resisting it. To me, the main problem with the grief process is when we resist it, when we're angry and we say, no, I don't want this change. But there's been a lot of good things. Like you say, the great pause. I think we have the capacity to see that we are saving lives. We're actually saving the planet right now. I mean, the visuals of the clear skies, the clear waters, beautiful. We're seeing that we get to reassess who we are and what we're doing, and so there's less resistance and in fact an easier process of grief. And that's not to say for everyone, but that's certainly something of the positive that's come out of it.
Play a song now, Greg. Greg is in the studio. Thank you so much, Greg.
Giddy up and get away, or we're going crazy.
listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. My name is Cora Van, and my very special guest, Samantha Lennie. Samantha, why do people not want to breathe?
That's a great question. I think, you know, like if we look at children who are able to feel their feelings, they have no control over their feelings. That part of the brain hasn't fully evolved. The way in which we tend to teach children to control their feelings is often through shame. We tend to teach them to shut them down through we need to fix this. We need to quieten that down. There's something wrong with it. And so we learn that it's shameful to feel sad. We see that as being weak. Anger we see as dangerous and damaging and destructive. And we see fear as being, again, you know, something that's defective. There's something wrong with you. If you're afraid of things, you should be courageous. Courageous is good. And so we've learned that the feelings of grief are actually negative, that they're bad, and we should silence them. We shouldn't feel those. There's been a whole movement around being positive. Let's be happy. Let's be, you know. And so people go, there's something wrong with me if I am grieving. There's something wrong with grief. And people, when they are grieving, are often told they need to move on. And so they stop talking to people about it because people shame them for the grief that they feel, particularly over a longer period of time. So that's why I think we've learned to hide it, to not show it, and to not learn about it.
If we are to embrace grieving, what are some of the first steps that we can take?
The first step is the decision that it's good to do it, to understand that there's a great outcome in choosing to grieve, in choosing to feel these feelings, and then to have what I call the tools of grieving, which are things that what feelings are emotions, energy in motion. And what we don't know, what we do is we feel this feeling coming and we go, I don't know what to do. And we can go into anxiety, we can go into depression to shut them down. Whereas instead, if we sit with the feelings, there's a whole lot of things we can do. So certainly mindfulness and meditation is one way in which we can tolerate watching these feelings come up. And then once they rise, we need to know what to do and we need things to do. And dance, music, art, painting, knitting, drawing, walking, putting it into the body and moving it in whatever way feels most natural to us. Going back to that childhood natural expression, before we had words, before we had language that knew how to shut it down, going back to that little child that goes, I know what to do with this feeling. You know, give me a paintbrush. I don't care what it looks like. It feels good to do something with it. That's really the first step. The arts is a constant expression of grief. We use the arts all the time, and that's why we love the arts, because it's our way of breathing quietly where no one's looking at us, is while we're rocking out to a mad song, you know, getting really angry, or we're crying, and it's because of the song. It's not because of me. There's nothing wrong with me. It's the song, you know, like that's what we all need to do.
Imagine a space, imagine a large circle around us. Within the middle, is like a fire, like a campfire. Imagine if we just observed our emotions in the same way we looked at a campfire, and then you could look around it, you can run around it, you can draw, write. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because there used to be, there was a tribe that actually would, when somebody was grieving, they would sit in a circle around the person who was grieving, and they would sit and just wait while the person went through the grief process. And so the person, it's like diving into a wave. You dive into the water of grief and you go through the process of it, and then you dive and when you hit the bottom of it, it's like you suddenly have this realization, this moment of, now I get it. And they have this wisdom that then they rise back up to the top of the water and bring it back to the tribe. And the tribe will sit there and go, what was it? and then they're able to, when you go through the feeling, so the first, you know, the wave of the feelings is diving into through the anger and the resistance, through that into the sadness, and through the fear of it, and then rising up the other side with joy and inspiration and understanding and wisdom. And that's exactly what we need, is people to be able to sit with grief and hold it and then go, that's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I, you know, people, when they start to cry, often say, oh, sorry, I'm so sorry. And I go, no, no, keep going. I want to know what's there. There's gold in that, you know, like, don't apologize. I'll wait. So you're right. And fire is a real source of transformation, and using fire to ignite. We see it as life. Like, even lighting a candle is a process of grief that's really powerful. If we have a candle burning for what we've lost, then we feel like there's new life. From the loss, we've created new light, and it works on an unconscious level. Rituals are powerful transformation tools as well. And having rituals for grief, there's a whole list of them. But creating meaningful rituals is really important. We've lost that a lot.
So we can see the fire, and we can observe the fire, and we can be observed as well. So there's a few different ways of looking at it, isn't there? But I love the idea of ritual as a way to process grief. Let's talk about that after a song.
Right.
What do you love about the Yarra Valley? Food, wine, fresh air, spectacular views, and of course, Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
Listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show, and my very special guest today is Samantha Rennie. Samantha, we're talking about ritual as a way to process grief. Could you tell us a bit about what is ritual?
Well, ritual can be a whole range of things. We've got rituals that we just do, like routines, you know, the daily routines, and sometimes it gets called rituals. I get up, I clean my teeth, I do some stretches, I have my breakfast, and that's what we call ritual, but it's actually more just a routine. And then there are rituals that are about creating something sacred. It's about actually making something that is invisible visible. And so there's a lot of things that go on in our world that are invisible. You know, our feelings are invisible to people. The experience of death is probably one of those most incredibly invisible experiences of life leaving a body. And we have no way of really comprehending that. And so the churches who were the keepers of that transition, they had many rituals around death that helped us understand and come to terms with it at an unconscious level. And that's how rituals work. The unconscious mind actually communicates to our conscious mind in very specific ways. And it communicates to us, one, through our physical body. It will say, it will give us a pain, or it will give us a sense of joy, saying the unconscious mind will go, this is good for us. Or it will give us pain and say, this is bad for us. And that's how the unconscious mind communicates through our physical body. Or then the unconscious mind also communicates through us in our dreams. And that is the true language of the unconscious. It's metaphorical. And it doesn't just, you know, give us very clear statements of you need to get up tomorrow and go for a walk. It will give us a dream metaphorical statement of perhaps, you know, an animal running through a forest. And so we have to interpret metaphors to understand what the unconscious is saying. And that's exactly what rituals are. We can create rituals like, you know, I went to a Catholic mass when I first became a grief community person. I went to the Catholic mass, and at that beautiful moment in the Catholic mass where they've done the correct hymns, they've done the correct actions to say it's now time for the spirit of this person to rise to heaven. They wave a thurible over the coffin that has the incense smoke rising from the coffin up to the heavens. And so everybody in the congregation witnesses that moment, and they're able to see the spirit rising. They've turned a ritual into something visual, and the unconscious mind is able to go, they're now leaving. Spirit is leaving the body. And in doing that ritual, we can start to come to terms with something that is otherwise completely unacceptable to our conscious mind. It's having to learn something completely new, and that ritual helps us process it and helps us feel that something sacred has just happened or is happening, and it communicates to us. So rituals really are a tool to helping us comprehend that something has happened. And that's the same with emotions. So when we burn something, if you get a piece of paper and you have a ritual around, say loving this person that has died, if we write the words that we wanted to speak to them and then we put it on a piece of paper and we throw it in a fire, the fire actually turns the paper from white, it goes black, and then to this light grey ash. And that, as we watch that, it's sending a message to our unconscious mind, because it's a metaphor that my words have just transformed and have risen through the flames and the smoke, and it's gone out to the universe where the life of my loved one has gone. And so that's the translation of the ritual. The unconscious mind is getting it as the metaphor. That's its language, and that's what rituals are.
It sounds beautiful. And like you said, in some situations, some places people do need to do rituals, but as a rule across society now, we do not have rituals.
No, we don't. And we really need them. You know, when I think of, and that's why, because we have so many losses now that are unacknowledged, and the sacredness of those transitions aren't acknowledged. You know, when I think of divorce, you know, when I separated from you know, my partner, we weren't married. We were de facto. So there was no ritual that said we were together. There was no ritual that said we were now separated. And so my capacity to process what that meant to me was bereft. There was no sacredness. There was no, and life is sacred. Every day is actually sacred. And that's why rituals that start the day and rituals that end the day and say, this has been another sacred moment. And the fact that we're even here is a miracle. I can't even comprehend what is going on. You know, it's sacred. It's magical. And if we have a ritual that honors and acknowledges each of those, and the transition with my partner, I wish that we had had a marriage, not because I wanted to marry him, but because I needed something sacred to say, we are in union and we are going to make a child. And then I wanted something sacred when it ended to say, this was sacred. And the decision to separate and start new journeys apart is sacred. Let's have a ceremony. Let's have a ritual that shows what's happening on an energy level, on the invisible level, as well as what's happening in the physical, legal, financial level. You know what I mean?
It's a very creative process.
It is.
Explain what you mean by sacred. I love that word sacred, but tell us more about what you mean by that.
The word sacred is really, again, it's about, I guess it's a state of deep gratitude. It's a state of really getting that we can't take anything for granted. You know, it's reminding us of the preciousness and the specialness of everything. You know, the fact that, I mean, in being a nurse and studying the physical human body, it's beyond comprehension how beautiful and magnificent the design of this body. And every breath I take, when I actually stop to think about it, is sacred because my lungs expand. The oxygen is perfectly balanced with my blood. Like the way in which I interact with the environment, all of it is sacred. And if we don't stop, take a moment of sacredness and ritual to kind of calm ourselves and be still and aware of what is going on here, we lose sight of that and we become complacent with it and we take it for granted and, you know, we become over familiar with it. I heard a beautiful statement. I'm going to forget the name of the guy at the moment, but he said, once a child has learnt that a bird is a bird and they call it a bird, they will never see the bird again. And that's the thing of ritual. If we keep something magical and mystical, then we remember that that is actually what life is. It is a complete mystery. And we like to think we're in control. And coronavirus is proving we have none. We like to think that we're in charge of it all. And the bushfires prove that we have none. Every day is just a miracle and beyond our capacity to control it. And rituals give us that reminder, really.
Mm. Let's talk about how to design a ritual of your own after a song. you're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show. My very special guest is Samantha Rennie. Samantha, let's talk about designing a ritual. This is called Art Journal. So we're talking about grief and the process of grief and how ritual can assist the grieving process. Let's talk about being creative in that and designing a ritual. How do we go about it?
Yeah, so the ritual, to create a whole brand new ritual that has meaning for you, is really about tuning into our physical body and recognizing when we are drawn to something that feels nourishing to us, I guess. So one of the rituals that I have is I do a mandala, and I'll just have a circle, and then I'll look for what color feels nourishing to me in that moment. It might be black, it might be green, it might be any color, and my ritual will be about drawing and moving with that color. So that's one example, and it may be that I want to do scratchy lines, it may be that I want to do soft merging lines. So that's one ritual that I've done that is quite a healing one. An underlying system around ritual is often understanding that different elements have different meanings. So for me as well, earth, wind, fire, using natural elements in my rituals is important. So water to me represents the emotions, and I can speak emotions into a water bowl, and then I can pour it onto plants, I can pour it onto the ground. They call that libation. And when we pour water back into the earth or back into our rivers, and it's filled with love or whatever feeling you want to pour, then the river will take it and it will merge it into life. And so that's another way of looking at ritual around water. Then there's fire. That's a core element as well for ritual. And so, like I said, there's candles, there's actual having fires and using that element of transformation. You know, one of the stories is the phoenix. And so what you burn then goes up into smoke, and it becomes, again, it goes out to the energetic field, and it can become something new. So having an element of fire in there is great. Using earth, so gardening is a massive ritual, planting a tree, planting plants. And as you put a seed in, it's the same as putting a seed into yourself and saying, right now, all I can manage is one thought. But if I put that in nourishing soil, I can watch it grow. And that ritual of gardening, of going through the seasons, which are, again, rituals of watching something flower, the rituals of gathering flowers and creating arrangements or giving flowers, that's another sacred ritual. So using nature and earth in that way, and that's kind of one of the major elements as well. And then the final element of air, and letting wind move us. And if you think of us as, where does wind move through us? It's the breath. And using breath as a ritual through meditation, through prayer, through speaking, that thing of taking in air, and then whatever the ritual involves by letting the air go, whether that is through actually, there's a beautiful ritual that can be used as well, where you put your feeling or put something into a chair. It's a gestalt therapy where it's an empty chair process, and you put something there and you speak to it, and you can do that as a ritual every day, and you can speak to who or whatever you want to be speaking to. So that's the movement of air as a ritual. So there's a whole lot of things like that that you can build on and bring more and more meaning to from your personal environment. And know that each time you're doing that act, it's because you want to acknowledge the invisible. So is it an invisible feeling that you're putting into a ritual? Or is it an invisible person that you want to bring into a ritual? Is it an invisible animal? What is it that you are now making visible through water, earth, fire, or air?
In a way, it's my thing. Always expressive, always expressive, like on a regular basis. So rather than just walking through spaces of your home and through work or into the shops or anywhere you go, you can always be mindfully aware of life and expressive, like on bring magic into every moment if you were that tuned in.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. We are energy in motion. Essentially, we need to forget that we're this physical being, but we are meant to be energy in motion all the time. And expression of the miracle that we are, an expression of this universe that we are part of, you know, so that, yes, as we walk, whatever, the question I ask many people is, what is alive in you? And we spend so much time suppressing what is alive in us because we have learned that so much of that is negative and so much of that is bad. I hear people constantly say, I actually don't like people. And I'm like, that's because so much of what we've learned about being human is bad. And it's not bad. It's just, it's been called bad, so it becomes bad. And so learning how to feel the feelings and go, it's alive in me. I want to do something with that. I need to speak that. I need to make it come out into the world. I am, you know, we are born to be here, to be seen, to be heard, to be acknowledged. That's why we came. That's why we're born. So, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
What a rich life you would lead if you approached each day, like, in this magical way.
Yeah. And, look, there are tools around expression that we don't learn as children and as adults growing up, and that's the difference too. We don't learn how to express our anger in a way that is about love. We learn to be angry against things. We learn to be angry about the things that people are doing wrong instead of learning that we are angry for the fact that love is not being acknowledged, or we're not angry that there's not enough love in the world. That's what we're here to get angry about, rather than we're angry against the bad things in life. We need to be angry for the good things in life. And so when I say to someone, if you're angry, what are you angry for something, or are you angry against something? And that's where you can know if the feeling of expression is about life enhancing rather than life diminishing. And that's the same with sadness. Are we diminishing ourselves? Are we grieving for how small we are in the world rather than grieving for how we didn't step, where we abandoned ourselves? And most grief and most anxiety and most depression is about self-abandonment. We didn't speak our truth. We didn't express ourselves. And so we keep ourselves small. Yeah.
I like the idea of emotions being a signal to alert you to your values.
Exactly. They're messengers. They're totally messengers. Yeah. You're right about that.
Let's play another song.
What you are, there's an answer. If you reach into your sorrow, and the sorrow that you know will melt away, and then a hero comes along with the strength to carry. And you cast your fears aside, and you know you can't survive. So when you feel like hope is gone, look inside you and be strong, and you'll finally see the truth that a hero lies in you. Inside you and be strong,
From Healesville to Warburton. From Seville to Hoddles Creek. This is Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
This is the Art Journal Show on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, and my very special guest today is Samantha Rennie. Samantha, a fascinating discussion about grief and ritual and ways to process grief. If people want to look up more information about this, where can people find you?
So I have a website, SamanthaRennie.com, and there's information on there. There's some information about rituals and other stuff around grief and loss. So that's certainly one avenue. And there's, you know, there is a lot of supports out there around grief, but grief and using art as a process of healing is certainly an important one to be discussing and looking at as well. Yeah.
It's been a real pleasure to have you on Art Journal today, Samantha. Thank you so much.
It's been great to be here and to be able to talk with someone who really gets this stuff and cares about it. You know, we need a lot more people talking about grief, for sure.